This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sanczak and Aaron Tamara.
If you are hell-bent for podcasting, well, the time is now, the place is here, and this is the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my oh-so-festive friend, Chris Sanczak. Merry Christmas, brother.
Merry Christmas to you. I'm in a festive mood, so why not talk about Judas Priest during Christmas?
That's right. It is the gift that keeps on giving, after all. And the first four or five albums by Judas Priest are something that I treasure. And so we're going to have a really good time talking about that today. You know, we did this a couple of weeks ago with Wally Gator from the CGCM podcast when we did the best and worst of Motley Crue. And so we thought, you know, that was so much fun. People dug it so much. We know our listeners love the early Judas Priest. And so today we're going to do that, the best and worst of 70s Priest. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, we have an awesome guest joining us today, and we'll get to that in just a minute. We have a little business to take care of first.
That's right. Before we get to all the fun, we're going to take care of our business, and you know us. Our business, it's iTunes reviews, Podchaser reviews, Facebook recommendations. However you want to do it, we'll take it. It is the season of giving. Give us a review. We're begging for it. We got a couple of great ones here today, because when they're great, we got to share them, and here's a couple of them right here. This one's entitled Listening Since the Beginning. It's got all 5 stars. It's an iTunes review. Hi, guys. Longtime listener. As a matter of fact, was the first geek of the week way back for ordering a couple of t-shirts. I listen every week and love the show. However, the most recent episode discussing rhythm sections had me yelling at my phone. We knew that would happen.
Well, yeah, we predicted it.
And Twistle and Moon at number 17. Are you guys nuts? Both redefined their instruments and were phenomenal musicians. For me, they are easily a top 3 choice. Anyway, happy holidays and keep the great content coming. And that comes to us from Adam. It's an awesome Apple Podcast review from right here in the good old USA.
Thanks for the review. Nice words. And your hatred of our pick is kind of what we were banking on. We wanted people to get upset by some of these picks, and it seemed to work. But yeah, I mean, it's always so subjective, you know. I mean,
right.
It was a fun one to do, and you know, and I could go back and probably do my list completely different if we did it now.
So
it just changes.
In retrospect, I definitely would change a few things the way I did it. But, you know, like I said, we had 20 picks right off the top, and then we went to 40 on the Chris and Aaron show for the Decibel Geek VIPs over on Patreon. And it gets even funnier in part two because, you know, we get to cut loose a little bit more. But, yeah, I think I would probably go back, and I would agree with Adam and think that In Twistle and Moon should have definitely been way higher than 17. It does seem kind of outrageous when you look at it like that.
If you're not a Patreon VIP, go to patreon.com, look for Decibel Geek, because you'll want to hear the other half of the picks we had. And Adam, I'll agree with you, because during that half of the show, I think I yelled at Aaron a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah. Save your fury and your rage for the Chris and Aaron show for part two of that.
Yeah, that's blood money.
Which I did not induct Bobby Dahl and Ricky Rocket, as you're trying to tell everybody I did. But yeah, awesome episode last week. A lot of fun. Glad we got to do that. Hey, before we move on to our favorite other people, I've got one more review here. You want it? It's Christmas, right?
Yeah, why not?
We deserve it. Here we go. This one is a Podchaser review. Check out Podchaser. They're an awesome website where you can review your favorite podcasts and also break it down episode by episode. So if you loved us during the best and the worst of Motley Crue, but you hate us during the rhythm section draft, then you can break it down and let us know both ways. This one's got all 5 pink stars, and it comes to us from Screaming Stevie G. And it goes like this. This is by far my favorite podcast. I listen to these guys, and it's like having a music discussion over a beer in a local bar. Nothing pretentious and entirely rock and roll. Keep on keeping on. We got that one just a couple of days ago, so what a perfect Christmas gift for the Decibel Geek Podcast. A couple of sweet reviews. You know, if you want to leave us one, we will greatly appreciate it. If it's awesome like these, we will definitely read them on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for doing those. And guys, you can review us on Facebook. Remember that. We haven't gotten one in a long time.
Yeah, recommendations.
So, yeah. So please take care of that. Keep them coming on no matter what the platform. And thanks again. And last piece of business, our Geeks of the Week, the people that shared on Facebook, retweeted on Twitter, last week's Rhythm Section draft that we just mentioned. Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, David Glenn, Mike Parnell, Shay Hargett, Decibel Geek TV, Rockin' Ron Runyon, The Bakery Podcast, Aaron Baker, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Alan Deshaun, David Cathy, Hakan Bergstad, At Linet, John AFC, Keith Rockford, Anxiety Descending, Eladio, JJ McElhenney, JJP, Body of the Soul, Doug Fox, Stickman, Focus on Metal Podcast, Ved Halen, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Some weeks we're right on the money with that. Other times we just can't seem to hit it right. The Mooger Fooger. We love that guy. And we love everybody else that shares and retweets our episodes each and every single week. That's why they're Geeks of the Week. And that's how you could become one too.
Yes. And time to introduce our special guest today to talk 70s Judas Priest with us. He's not only an amazing Kiss book and soon to be Aerosmith book author, he's also the host of the Kiss FAQ podcast and the Look It's Rock and Roll podcast. It is the one, the only, Julian Gill. Hey, Julian.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on the show, guys. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to those reviews. Those were awesome.
Good.
Oh, yeah. We like them when they're good. Yeah, when they're nice, they're even more fun to read.
You know it.
So we hit you up kind of last minute on this, but I was fishing for possible contributors. So and you were one of the first people to join in. I went on Facebook, just like, who else loves 70s Priest? And you were on it right away. So I get a feeling this era of the band is very near and dear to your heart.
This is my preferred era of the band, and I saw you post that. I'm like, boom, I'm putting my name down. If my name gets picked, I'm just looking forward to an excuse to talk about Judas Priest.
Awesome. Heck yeah. This is my favorite era of Priest as well. It wasn't the era that I was introduced to or came up with, but nowadays, looking back, man, these first five Priest albums are hard to beat.
It's weird. It's like going to be three for three because they're at this point in time, that's the era I go to the most.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking at this thinking maybe we should just call this one the best and the more best of Judas Priest in the 70s because there's really not a lot of worst that we're going to come across here today.
Yeah, there's no time for change on this discography like we had with Motley Crue. All right, Julian, so were you into them back in the 70s or did you come to them later like we did?
Oh, I came to them later. And oddly, you know, living in England, I didn't get into them in England. It was in America after I moved there that I discovered them. And I was at a lake house on a friend upstate New York, and his older brother was playing a song. And it stuck with me for years, and I didn't know who it was. And I kept trying to find out who this song was. It resonated in my head for 5 years. Finally, in 85, I got into the band with Turbo and went back and bought the back catalog. And then I discovered that song that he'd been playing in 1980 at the Lake House, and it was United. And I was like, oh, wow, that's the song, you know. So it was fun to go back and discover that they'd impacted me for 5 years and sent me on this wild goose chase of trying to ask my friends, do you know this song? It goes like this. Cool. And no one did because everyone was listening to Duran Duran at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went back through the catalog from there and kind of got stuck into the 70s a lot more than the 80s stuff.
Yeah. Aaron, same for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my introduction to Judas Priest was my cousin Robin's cassette tapes, and he had, like, I don't know, the 80s stuff. He didn't have a lot of this. I think he started with British Steel and Onward. And so I kind of liked them, didn't really get into them when I was younger. I had a buddy that had the cassette tape, a Turbo, and we swapped for a week, and I was jamming on that. I'm like, okay, Priest ain't too bad. But then when I started getting older and really started getting into Priest and started going back further, because, I mean, I knew their popular stuff. I didn't know nothing about the band, really. And as we go through the list, you know, we'll see which ones really stand out to each one of us individually. But these are the ones I go back to the most often. I mean, there's great stuff throughout the entire Judas Priest career and discography, all the way up to Firepower that just came out a year or so ago. But, man, for me, anytime, any day, I can listen to this stuff and I can feel good about it. Yeah, love me the old early Priest. But I didn't come up with it.
I didn't either, and I got into the way I got into Priest was through Headbangers Ball in the 80s, and it wasn't anything new that they had out at the time. I really got into Headbangers Ball, I want to say 1986, 87, around 86, I think. And all the way through the late 80s, they would You've Got Another Thing Coming, the video would get played like regularly on Headbangers Ball. Yeah. Regardless if they had anything new out or not, it just, for some reason, that was one of their favorite videos to play, and it just sort of just wormed its way into my head, and I bought two of the first CDs that I bought with my own money in the store were Kiss Unmasked and Judas Priest Screaming for Vengeance, and of course Unmasked didn't get a lot of play in my house at the time, but Screaming for Vengeance did, and but yeah, I didn't get into the 70s era stuff, till probably maybe about 15 years ago, I think. A friend of mine gave me the Stained Class on vinyl at the time, and I didn't know much about that early. I mean, I knew certain songs because some of those songs were still popular later on, but didn't really dig into them until about 15 years ago when I got that album and then started buying them all at that time. That kind of fell in love with the band.
Yeah, Stained Class will do it. Yeah. Hand somebody that and let them go. You're off.
Yeah. And, but yeah, so I mean, let's, you guys ready just to jump into Rock and Rolla 1974?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this album, debut album released September 6, 1974, on Gull Records, produced by Roger Bain, who worked on Black Sabbath's first three albums. And this album is the only one to feature drummer John Hinch. Thank God for that. I might be going and be the bad guy on this one. I do not like this album. Wow. It has moments that I kind of like, but then I started reading up on it and I didn't even know this. Apparently, you know, cause Glenn Tipton, he joined really close to when they made this record, and he brought the songs Tyrant, Epitaph, and The Ripper. And Roger Bain goes, no, we're not going to put these on the record. And wow. It's like, what are you thinking, man? This album does not do much for me overall. It's got its moments, this is the one I hardly ever go back to. I just don't dig it. And I'll pick my best and worst, and I'll let you guys go first.
I actually do like this album a lot. There's four songs on this album that I wouldn't want to live without. The rest of it, I mean, there is some kind of odd stuff on here, but I mean, it's Judas Priest. They haven't really become the Judas Priest that we all know and love yet. We're going to discover today that this is going to be a projection thing that's going to happen over time. Little by little, they're going to become Judas Priest, but I don't think they're really quite there yet on this one. This is the very beginning, but man, there's some great songs on here. For me, I think the best song on the debut album is still one of my favorite Priest songs of them all. And it's the song Never Satisfied, I think is by far the best song on this album.
That was my pick too.
And that one's the most Priesty of the songs on the album, isn't it? So, I disagree with Chris on the drumming. I actually think John Hinch is a great pocket drummer. He's really tight, compact, nuanced, very basic. He's not a drummer's drummer, but for what he's doing on this material, he is very, very basic. I mean, it's almost like, you know, four on the floor and that's it. You know, just very limited kits and going with it from there. You know, like almost like a session guy just coming in. Yeah. I love the guitar work on this album throughout because it's not yet a team. You've got Ken and then you've got Glenn and they don't really know their places. So they're not in perfect synchronicity yet. So, and it's a hybrid because of Al Atkins. So my favorite off this song from the first time I heard this album is Run of the Mill. It is just epic. Who'd have thunk that a band like Priest would be capable of that sort of composition and structure straight out of the gate? I mean, it's a horrendously complex song, and lyrically, you know, just something about it when he kind of sneers and sings, "Should I give sorrow or turn round and sneer or stare," or whatever the word is in it. It's actually a song that's in my life top 10.
For a Priest song, for sure. It's like, if you didn't know that this was Judas Priest, you might not know that that's a Priest song. You know, if somebody were to play it for you and say, "Tell me who this is," you know, other than maybe the Rob Halford signature vocals, but it's way outside the box for anything Priest has ever even done since.
Well, and the funny thing is that's one of the ones that Tipton did bring into the band. But I think there was a lot of collaboration on that song, but that, and like, there's certain things on these first couple of records that are, they're almost prog-ish.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not a prog fan, so therefore, of course, I'm not into this record as much. I don't like the dry production. I think it worked okay for Sabbath because I thought Tony Iommi could get a much grittier, crunchier sound on his own through his gear. There's a lot of kind of, I don't know, the production on this record's not for me. And you're right though, I shouldn't blame the drummer for not liking the material, because it's not really his fault. I mean, he did a capable job, but I don't know. This album's kind of like Baby Pictures. It's like you're not really seeing them as they were fully developed. So weird, but yeah, Never Satisfied, definitely my favorite song. And, you know, like Julian said, the most Priesty. Halford would go on and do this song in his solo set in the early 2000s, and then Priest actually did it on the Epitaph tour. So it's even they agreed that it was the most Priesty. So that's my favorite too. The worst one, in my opinion, on here is "Dying to Meet You." I do not like this song. It's just boring and weird to me, and I'm not a fan of baritone Rob Halford on a ballad. You know,
yeah.
"Amen this morning." Yeah, it's like, no. And like, it's weird because, you know, I'm also a giant Thin Lizzy fan, and they kind of charted a similar path where they were doing kind of like, Lizzy was folky at first, but then they got kind of like jazzy and slow on certain albums in the early days before they kind of found their sound, just like Priest did. But Lizzy pulled it off, and I don't think Priest did on a lot of their ballads in the early days. I will make exceptions later on, but this song is just like, ugh, this is an instant skip for me. Never have been a fan of it.
I like it when it kicks into "Hero, Hero." First part of the song is kind of weird, but then it's like, because it's two songs on one track. It's on track 9, but when it kicks into "Hero, Hero," that's one of the four songs I really like on here. I also dig the opening track on the album, "One for the Road," I think is pretty killer. And the title track, "Rock-a-Rolla," is one of my favorite Priest songs too. So I think four strong tracks off of this one. The rest of them, still okay. Nothing horrible. I guess if I was going to pick a worst one, the one that I don't like is the whole "Winter Deep Freeze, Winter Retreat" thing.
I actually like that one.
But there's some cool parts in it. But again, you're talking about like prog rock.
Yeah, it is.
This is four tracks and really kind of one song that changes. I mean, it's weird. It's weird, but it's still cool. Like I said, there's nothing on here I hate.
That's funny, because I wrote, you know, for "Winter," you know, "Artie, the first real taste of Rob's capabilities," yeah, on the album, vocally. "Deep Freeze," yeah, nice drums. Sorry, Chris. you know, I never understood why it was split off from the preceding track. And then, you know, I completely agree. "Winter Retreat" is my least favorite on this album. It's just more Artie. It doesn't have any context of why it exists there. So therefore, it's like the weakest link. And once it gets to the acoustic section, I keep expecting to hear Geddy Lee. It's just like setting itself up to be a Rush song from the air. So going back to "Dying to Meet You" and "Hero, Hero," I adore that. It's like Metallica's "One" 16 years before they did that. I mean, it's the same kind of story of the war and the damage and the injury to the human being. So I've always dug that one. So, you know, I think there's like, you know, I'm probably with Aaron. There's four real keepers off this album. But production-wise, I think you have to have the right pressing. I had a bunch. I had like a Gull LP back in the day. I had the RCA American one with like the Gremlin riding the bomb and all that. And they all sounded like garbage. I finally got the Japanese Victor CD, and the clarity is just stunning. And it really does offset some of the negative aspects of that production, which, you know, if this album had sounded like the first Black Sabbath album, well, it would have also needed that quality of material as well.
That's a big difference in the two albums. But yeah, I'm going to have to go find that Japanese pressing. So thanks, Julian. You're going to make me spend more money. All right. Shall we move on to Sad Wings of Destiny?
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'll go first. This came out in 1976. Took a whole year off between albums, which is interesting. This album has grown in stature with me over time. Love that one of maybe my favorite Judas Priest album cover. It's a great cover. Just a great song, and man, the 1-2 punch of the opening of this record is one of the best there is. To have Victim of Change has opened the record and then go into the Ripper. That's just that's just an amazing thing. They had another different drummer on this album. They had Alan Moore, and this would be his only album. This was released March of 1976, also on Gull Records. I don't have much bad to say about this one. I think it's an amazing record. As I said, I've grown to love it more and more over the years. I'll go ahead and pick my best off this one. It's very difficult to choose between this and Victim of Changes, but I would go with The Ripper as my favorite song on this album. And it almost feels like the birth of thrash metal, the way it's kind of set up. And with all the time signature changes, which that would kind of become a hallmark of thrash metal. Like, you can tell the guys in Megadeth and Metallica and all those bands grew up listening to this stuff. It's just, you can hear it. Halford's dramatic vocals, the spooky guitar parts and the backing vocals is almost like 70s horror movie kind of, it's almost atmospheric the way I love that part of this song. And then, you know, what's more metal than writing a song about Jack the Ripper? You know, it's just like almost horror metal, and Halford's vocals just insane. The Ripper is definitely my favorite song in this one.
You'll soon shake with fear, then never knowing if I'm near. I'm sly and I'm shameless, nocturnal and nameless, except for the Ripper, or if you like, Jack the Knife.
There's really nothing on here that I don't like. I mean, if I had to pick a worst off here, maybe Epitaph. But I mean, golly, I mean, Victim of Changes, The Ripper, Dreamer, Deceiver,
that'd be mine.
Tyrant, Genocide, Island of Domination. I love all these songs. This is probably favorite Judas Priest album of all time. I love this one a lot. It's tough. I love The Ripper too, but I'm going to go with Victim of Changes. I mean, that song is just, that's a 10 right there. I mean, so is The Ripper, you know, and so is some of these other songs. But yeah, those two are 10s for sure. Tied either way, I'll give the edge to Victim of Changes. I just love that song so much.
Okay. All right, here we go. I've got a real problem with Sad Wings of Destiny. Take your album, flip it over. Look at the credits, the track sequence. Does it start with Victim of Changes?
Yeah.
On all the original pressings, it does not.
Will it start with the Ripper?
No, they flipped it around. It's a concept album. It starts with Prelude, goes to Tyrant, Genocide, Epitaph, Island of Domination. Then your B-side starts with Victim of Changes. I think this is a concept album.
Oh.
I think they made an error in manufacturing, and your B-side became your A-side and vice versa. And once you listen to it in the correct order, which I resequenced mine on the CD, it makes sense.
Wow.
It tells a story.
Yeah, even looking at the track listing on here, and I never even thought about that before, that makes total sense. Why would Prelude be the beginning of side B? Prelude should be the album introduction, right?
Exactly.
I never...
Makes perfect sense.
And why would you lead off an album of Victim of Changes? Yeah, it's a fantastic song. I mean, come on. But it makes no sense as track one to start off an album with a nearly 8-minute song.
It's true. It's more of a midpoint of an album song.
Yeah, you need something to build to, which the whole first side does. Now, getting to my favorite, The Ripper, without a doubt. I mean, you get all the elements that you expect from Priest distilled down into one sub 3-minute raging slab of Birmingham grit or Midlands grit. The vocal on this one, I love Rob's voice.
Yeah.
And just the way he sings it and some of like the stabbing vocal, well, Jack the Ripper stabbing vocals. There you go. And the guitars and the drums and the bass. There's like elements on this song. You get like the flanging and tremolo from the guitar that they used a lot on Winter on the previous album, but now it has a meaning. Now it fits into a song and isn't just like, you know, guitar wankery.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to totally go back and listen to this the way you just talked about, because that sounds, never really thought about listening to it that way. And I bet a bunch of our listeners are going to be doing the same thing.
Think of it as a concept album, you know, about evil. I mean, the prelude, you know, is oh God, Paul Stanley in my head declaring, now it gets rough after the end of Prelude, because he goes straight to Tyrant. And then you talk about like the evil guy's sins and genocide. And then where is it happening? It's happening on the Island of Domination. Then you get the Victim of Changes. So to me, and maybe, you know, I just been drinking a bit too much vodka that night, but it seemed to make sense.
No, it's yeah. And yeah, I picked Epitaph also as the worst, but I still like it though. It's good, but it's kind of it has a Queen sound to it. Like I hear a little bit of Queen in certain things on these early records, and I think they were an influence on them. And they were a direct influence on a song I'll talk about on another album. But I would pick that worst, but like this is. I mean, once you get past the first one, I think they're like basically perfect albums, without maybe a weird one here and there, but I really don't skip anything after that.
Yeah, Epitaph sounds unfinished. It's my least favorite on the album. It sounds like Rob trying to do Freddie. It's operatic. It's very Queenish with the piano and the vocal, the harmonies, but it sounds like Bohemian without the rhapsody. Judas. No budget Priest, you know, so there's a difference, you know, that they didn't quite have Freddie Mercury's artistic vision of how to do things in the studio. And they certainly didn't have any budget to be recording it. So only for that reason, it feeling unfinished, unrealized, is it my least favorite.
Yeah. All right.
And the cover is one of the coolest album covers of any band ever, I think.
Yeah, I've always wanted to have like a frame print of the painting of that cover.
You should get a full back tattoo of it.
Oh yeah. My wife would
love
that.
Did you see the new 3D cover that came out for Record Store Day? It was like kind of embossed with texture. Wow. Really cool.
Yeah. I thought that was great. And I think that maybe it was from that, or somebody created a 3D holographic image online that you could look at.
Right on.
So that brings us to April of 1977, and Sin After Sin comes out. First, this is kind of their major label debut, because they're not on Gull anymore. They're on Columbia. And produced by Deep Purple bassist Roger Glover And their only album to feature drummer Simon Phillips, who was a great drummer. I'm sure you guys know the story about Roger Glover getting brought in on this. Like they were gonna produce this themselves, and Columbia finally heard like the rough mixes and freaked out and flew Roger Glover like literally overnight to work on the record and save it.
He failed.
Oh, you don't like this one?
This album sounds like garbage. You know, even when I was 14 years old listening to it, I'm like, this sounds like junk. I mean, the production is absolutely horrible than the quality versions of the previous two albums to my ear. I think it's flat. It's muddy. It has absolutely no separation or sonic brightness throughout. It's just it has no definition.
It is a little flat compared to the first two. I agree with that. It doesn't have the brightness musically, I guess, sonically, as the first two albums have. And not quite as good as the first two albums, I don't think. I mean, there's four songs on here that I love, that I think by pre-standards are 8s, 9s, and 10s. But overall, there's some weaker spots on this album, too. So I'm going to say my least favorite on here, probably... Oh, man, I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up. I'll go with Here Come the Tears as my least favorite, and my favorite off of Sin After Sin, which I love Sinner. I love Starbreaker. I really love Dissident Aggressor. That's one of my all-time favorite Priest songs, but you just can't mess with that cover, man. And I never knew it was a cover when I was a kid or when I first heard this. I had no idea it was a cover. But so awesome. Diamonds and Rust. That's my favorite off of here.
View of Julian on this record. From a production standpoint, it probably is worse as far as like the dynamics being missing and stuff, but I don't know, that the production of this record has a charm to it to me where I think it makes, maybe, and it's probably because of the great songs on it, but I just like the way that it all came together. And obviously they didn't like it because they didn't go with Roger Glover again after this, but I like the production myself. But as far as the songs, oh shit, I mean, this album is great, but Diamonds and Rust, that was almost my pick, but I you know, and this could change by the week, but as of now, I still think my all-time favorite Judas Priest song of all eras is Dissident Aggressor. I just love that song. So that's an easy pick for my favorite. And for my last favorite, it was kind of a toss-up between Last Rose of Summer and this one, but I went with this one just because Last Rose of Summer is a better written song. I went with Raw Deal. I am not a fan of this one, and I honestly, it sounds like it could have fit on Rockarola to me. It has the same type of song construction, and you know, even well with the production on that one, it just doesn't sound that great. It sounds kind of bland and boring, but you know, Dissident Aggressor, Sinner, Diamonds and Rust, Starbreaker, good God. And then, you know, I don't mind Here Come the Tears. I think it's pretty good. But, yeah, those are my picks. What about you, Julian?
Yeah, what you just said about Roar Deal, I wrote murky, meandering morass about that. Melody not conducive to headbanging or sing-along. And but it's not. You know, first, you know, I bashed the production, but I love the cover art. That is great artwork for an album. It really does do a good job of giving you an idea of what you're about to listen to. But favorite, I'm with you. Dissident Aggressor. And then the fact that this song won a Grammy 33 years later says all that needs to be said about that song. Even with the rubbish production here, it still stands far apart from everything else on this album. It's pure Priest. It's got a seething vocal, scorching guitars, clinical drums, pulsating bass. Yeah. Favorite, and I'll probably take some flack, Diamonds and Rust. I love this song, and give me the version that they recorded 2 years before for Sad Wings of Destiny, which is a bonus track on one of those reissues. Because of the production and because the interpretation is better. And what do I mean by that? There's a better galloping feel to the song on the earlier recording than here. Here it loses that flow.
And it's
not all because of the production. It's because of the performance is completely different. The feel has changed in 2 years.
Wow. We're on opposite.
I'll agree with that. I've got that CD with them bonus tracks on there, and that 75 version of that song is way better.
No, I totally disagree with both of you on this. The one on Sin After Sin is classic. It's way better than the one from 2 years before, in my opinion.
You think so? I don't know.
That's a great song.
It is a great song. And it's wild that, I mean, when Priest does a cover like that, I mean, Joan Baez, what metal band is doing Joan Baez covers and making them awesome? You know, that's crazy.
Yeah, I went back to try to listen to the Joan Baez version when I first got into this one, and I was like, oh, never mind. I'll stick with the Judas Priest version. Amazing record. So let's move on to, did we all pick our best and worst?
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, let's move on to Stained Class.
Aha, my very number one favorite Judas Priest album of all time.
Wow. And why is
that? Out of everything.
Why is it your favorite?
Oh, the songs. The plethora of amazing songs. It's a perfect album. There's not a song on here I don't like. For the worst on my sheet here, I've got a question mark. Because there's nothing bad on here. Every song on here is badass. I don't even... It's so difficult for me to pick a best one because I love them all. I love everything about this song. Which I could say that about everything on here. But this one, I think, just stands a hair above the rest in my heart. This was a song that made me go, okay, I am in on Priest. I am totally in on this band now. And it's Saints in Hell. I mean, like I said, everything's amazing. You know, most bands never write a song as good as the worst song on Stained Class.
Yeah. Well, this is like the one where it all came together. You know, you had the songs were there, the sound, the production was certainly there, and plus you got Les Binks playing drums. And
yeah,
he's an amazing drummer. But it's the most complete album of that period, I think. And before they started kind of leaning commercial after this. So Interesting pick on Saints in Hell. They actually played that when I saw them live a couple of years or a year or so ago. And that one, that was a shock. I don't think anybody was expecting to hear that one. As far as my favorite on this one, this was hard to choose one because, and for worst, I picked Invader just because I had to pick one, but I like it. I think it's great.
I love that song.
I know, I do too. But I'm like, do I have to pick one? The best for me is Exciter. I just, it's such a great song. And I kind of view it as the evil version of Communication Breakdown. You know, Halford's got the high vocals, it's got the up-tempo thing. The solo on this song is amazing. And then, of course, Les Binks drumming at the beginning of the song. You're kind of like, oh, this is a new era of the band starting up. And, yeah, this is a complete album. I have no complaints about Stained Glass at all.
I agree with Aaron. You know,
yeah.
Somehow I didn't think I was going to agree with Chris. That just seems to be how this discussion's been going with our differing tastes here. This is the album with the best drums of any pre-1980 Priest album, and the production finally makes Priest what they ought to be in my mind. In my head, it's the best Judas Priest album, hands down. It is to Priest what Power Age is to AC/DC for me. Just the album where it all comes together. There is not a bad song on the album. The album art is iconic. The band's logo is used for the first time on an album. It's just absolutely fantastic from Exciter onwards. You know, Exciter, come on. The gauntlet's thrown down. Wow. But my favorite is the title track. It is just, again, I've used the word a couple of times, scorching. It's blending tons of different elements into one song. Great range of vocal on the spectrum of where Rob can sing. He's singing all over the place. You just end up saying, how the hell did he sing that? And you then say the same about the guitars, because Ken and Glenn are now a single guitar playing a ton of different notes and style. And I love all like the grand elements and the kind of the effects and the solo. This is the song with just one of the very, very best solos for me.
I think there's some, you know, hidden gems that you don't really hear about much, like Savage and Hero's End. I think both of those songs are, you know, I'd love to hear. Some of the deep tracks from Judas Priest during the 70s are some of the best deep tracks of any like classic band you'll find. You know, it's like,
isn't that absolutely incredible? And then, of course, you've got the song that calls them all the trouble years later. Better by You, the Spooky Tooth Color. I cannot listen to that song without grabbing my guitar and playing along to it.
Oh, it's great.
It doesn't make me want to grab a gun. It makes me want to grab a guitar.
Right.
And that is a fantastic song.
Yeah. There's nothing bad about this album. I'd be surprised in the comments after this comes out if we're going to hear anyone hating on this record.
I don't see how. If you love rock and metal, this is an album that everybody should have and listen to on the regular, I think. I'm no doctor, but I recommend it.
Yeah, so my least favorite, and my notes say I don't want to pick one. but since I have to pick a least favorite, I'm going with Hero's End. And that's simply because it's the last track on the album, and I'm exhausted by listening to the album musically by this point.
Not much condemnation for that one.
No, I guess I'm going to agree with Julian. If I have to pick a worst one, which, like you said, like everybody said, there isn't one, I guess I'll go with Hero's End, too.
I love that song.
Because I love Invader. I mean, even White Heat, Red Hot,
yeah, that's great.
That's not one everybody says, oh, Matt Priest song, but killer, just killer.
All right.
Love so it.
Got one left to go. And that is what depends on what you want to call it. It's either Killing Machine or Hellbent for Leather. I always thought Killing Machine sounded cooler. Came out October 9th, 1978 on Columbia. And by all accounts, most people think this is kind of when they started going commercial, because the image changed. Some of the songs were a little bit more accessible, although I think all the songs on this one are great too. This album might be a tad too long. That might be my only complaint. Because I thought that Stained Class was perfect in the tight, you know, track listing it had, but this is a iconic album, and geez, trying to pick a worst on this one was almost impossible too. It was an obvious choice once I really thought about it. I'll tell you why. My worst on this one was Take on the World.
Me too.
For a couple reasons. For one thing, in a positive light, it was kind of ahead of its time, because it's a gang vocal anthem. And there weren't, other than Kiss, that there wasn't a lot of people doing those types of songs back then. But I don't like it because this is where the Queen influence comes in directly. Because
yeah.
We Will Rock You came out a year before this. And I have a feeling they were like, we need a We Will Rock You. So they wrote Take on the World.
What you stepping out?
That's what it sounds like. So it sounds like they wrote it for sporting events. And my best, this was almost a tie, because the Hellbent for Leather is an amazing song, but I went with Delivering the Goods. Always love this song. I love the tempo change that goes into the chorus and it starts grooving. And I got turned on to that thanks to Skid Row with Halford covering that song live on the Besides Ourselves EP.
Yep.
Delivering the Goods is my favorite, and my least favorite is Take on the World for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. Take on the World, I think you nailed it. Yeah, it was kind of a this would be great at soccer games kind of thing. But another one on here I was not a big fan of, I guess, is Evening Star. But, I mean, everything else on the album I love. Maybe Burning Up a little bit on the less. But as far as songs, I mean, Hellbent for Leather, I think probably maybe was the very first Judas Priest song I ever heard. I think it was on one of those, like, metal collection cassette tapes of the, where it was all different bands. I think that was probably the first Priest song I ever heard. And that one is I mean, that's amazing, iconic. Rock Forever. I love the vocals on that song, man. Every one of these albums, every one of these songs, I mean, you say it about every single one, even the ones we don't like as much as the others. Rob Halford is without a doubt one of the greatest metal vocalists, period, of any lifetime that has ever lived on this earth. I mean, just unbelievable the stuff he does. The cover, the Green Man Lishi with the two-pronged crown.
Awesome.
So awesome.
'Cause you're the Green Man Lishi with the two-pronged crown. All my trying is up, all you're bringing is down. Just taking my love and slip away, leaving me here trying to keep from following you.
Awesome. I had no idea that was a Fleetwood Mac song. And then I like went back to try to find and see what the original sounded like. It's like, no, this is a Priest song now.
Yeah, they perfected
it. You've lost your rights to it. No, I mean, that's so good. That song is amazing. And I don't even know what it's about, but it's so good. I got seven songs I can't live without on this one, and I agree with Chris. The number one best song on here is, without doubt, Delivering the Goods.
Green Man Lishi, they made their own, just like Diamonds and Rust, but it should not have been on the album, right. And it wasn't on the British version, so right. I don't bring that one in. I agree with both of you on Take on the World. It's just such a blatant attempt to rip off We Are the Champions, and We Will Rock You in one song, pre-style. I will say, though, it is still tons better than Red, White, and Puke, or Heart of a Lion, in terms of those anthems that they try to do every now and then. Yeah. Before the Dawn, gorgeous, love
yes.
it. Evening Star, it was mentioned. I used to hate that song because it's so syrupy and overly positive, and I need more anger and less happy, but that's just me. Favorite, Hell Bent for Leather. Grab that Harley, crack that whip, rev that throttle, hit the road, and crank the music.
Chorus is just so fucking amazing.
It's just one of those riffs. Yeah. I wish I could do that one more justice on the guitar, because I can't play along with that. So I love that song. But there's so much on this album that is good. I think it suffers because it's sandwiched in between Stained Glass and British Steel. So it kind of gets overlooked. But the drums, again, this is the second album with Binks. He beats the hell out of that kit. I mean, it's almost like Judas Priest, Creatures of the Night, with those bombastic drums. Absolutely,
yeah, really good album. Another one's off here. I like I like Evil Fantasies. I think it's pretty cool.
I do too.
I like the way he sings it. He's kind of got more of a growl to his voice. It's almost like Rob Halford singing in a Gene Simmons style.
Yeah, I have a theory that he was loaded when he recorded that vocal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's really just going for it.
Yeah, this is the stuff I love. This is the Judas Priest that I just would never want to live without. I always remember my Uncle Bruce telling me the story about when he stopped being a Kiss fan. It was because he's seen Priest opening for Kiss, and that was the end. All of a sudden, Kiss wasn't that cool anymore, but Priest sure was, you know? So Judas Priest, man, changed a lot of lives in the 70s and put out some of the best music of their career, the best music in rock and roll history. These first five albums, it's hard to find a band with a run of albums that are that good.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. They like I feel like we weren't as critical as we should have been, but it's kind of hard to be when you're looking at this material.
Yeah. No, there simply is not that much to pick apart. I mean, there are a few things, and you know, Sin After Sin, I love Let Us Pray, but I would love to hear Scott Travis do the drums on there.
Oh, yeah.
With his double bass, because there are some songs that could be reinterpreted and really, you know, kick even more ass. So there's so little here. It's easy to pick apart little things, but come on, this is the foundation of Priest, and what a strong foundation they had.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear the listeners say what they're best and worst of in the comments.
And maybe if you're not real familiar with this early Priest stuff, maybe today we helped you to find a spot to start and get yourselves in on it. Because if you're not listening to this stuff, you're missing out on something pretty amazing. And you got three super cool dudes right here telling you it's true. You got to have this stuff.
Yeah. And Julian, thanks for being a part of this. Do you want to go ahead and plug away on all this cool stuff you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks again, guys. You know, it's nice just to get to hang out with both of you and talk music. What am I working on? I am trying to finish Aerosmith on Tour, 1973 to 85. Their classic era. Talk about a run of albums. What a run of albums they put out, you know, in the 70s. And it, just like the stuff I've done with Def Leppard and Kiss, it's touring history. So it's contemporary reviews from hopefully people's necks of the wood that give a view of how the band was perceived at the time. I just love trying to put these tour histories together because it just keeps me in the library. That's all I'm working on. I'm not doing any Kiss stuff anymore. That's all done.
But you're still doing the Look It's Rock and Roll and the Kiss FAQ podcast.
Yeah, we still do the Look It's Rock and Roll podcast when we have the urge to talk about some different music than Kiss. We still do the Kiss FAQ podcast nearly every week. We're kind of splitting our time now between the two. So, you know, I'm finding I have a little bit more time to listen to other people's shows as well. So that's nice.
Very cool.
Right on. You ever consider doing a Judas Priest book?
No interest in, on that level with that band. There's only one other band I've ever thought about doing a book on, and that was Wasp.
Oh, I'd read that.
Ah, that would be cool too.
Well, I'm excited to read the Aerosmith one. You'll have to come back on the show to promote the book because, I love talk, especially the early Aerosmith. That's great stuff.
Yes. I love me Aerosmith. Always did. Again, same kind of story, but, you know, we'll save that for a different time.
Okay.
Well, Merry Christmas, guys. Happy holidays. Whatever you're doing this time of year, I hope you're enjoying it with your family and with the people you love. We got to hang out today with our awesome friend, Julian Gill. What a Christmas time treat that is. And, so love you some early Judas Priest. Get out there. Check it out. Become a Decibel Geek VIP at patreon.com. Check us out on the YouTube. Yeah, I'm talking about Decibel Geek TV with Rock and Ron Runyon. For our New Year's Eve celebration, you can join us live on our Facebook and on Decibel Geek TV. So I guess we'll see you then. And otherwise, I guess, that's it. We'll see you next week.
Happy holidays.
Bah humbug.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.